Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars.
Folks, you can't get rid of us. We're back for the 11th time. It's Staffcast, and I am, as always, Richard Staff. And joining me once again are our favorite Floridian and unretired coach, Mr. Sean Doolittle.
Hey.
And we also have pinch host once again, our Laredo correspondent, Tom Hackamer.
Honored to be filling in for Hildy this time instead of Sean.
He's going to replace me one of these days. And, you know, I've always said that Sean isn't a real New Jersey guy. He's, you know, he's Deadwood Doolittle, Duke of the Dakotas. So we had to get a real Jersey guy. So we got Home Run Derby champion and certified New Jersey legend and Foul Territory host, Todd Frazier, here today. Hello, Todd.
That was the best intro I've gotten in my career, so I appreciate that.
I had to step up for you here. We're not usually in the presence of royalty around here.
That's hysterical. How's everybody doing? Good?
Yeah,
we're doing good, man. We're getting ready for the season up here in D.C. How are things going with you? How's Foul Territory?
It's going well, man. We're in our first year, a little over a year old. Crazy how things come in fruition. Now, you know, for some reason, I'm like, you know what? Eventually, I'll probably want to do a podcast, but it's got to be the right one, you know? So Mark Wiener and Scotty Braun came to me last year, and they're like, dude, we want you to come aboard. And I said, you know what? I think this is good. It's a player's perspective. You know, we talk about the things that, you know, you don't really hear on TV or radio too often, but we want the players to get their perspective on what's going on, get whatever they have off their chest, and enjoy a nice 15-minute conversation, man. That's basically what we do. And I think it's become a really good show, and I think people understand now. Listen, you're not going to get as much footage on TV. Why don't you come watch Foul Territory and see real-life things? And I think that's the best part of it.
It's the only show brave enough to get Pete Alonso to talk about having to go to the bathroom.
Pete is one of a kind, dude, and he will tell you anything in the world. He'll give you the shirt off his back. That's the type of dude he is. So, yeah, we get some funky things on the show, and I think that's what makes it really, really epic sometimes.
And half the fun is getting answers for things that aren't on the field, because I think one of the ongoing themes of this podcast through the stories is that baseball players are probably the weirdest people on earth. And if you're just going to ask them, so, you know, how'd that home run feel? You're not going to get into the real weirdness at their core.
Exactly. No, you want to know what the heck was going on in your mind, what's going on inside your body, all that kind of good stuff. And next thing you know, you got a really good story that is unscripted, and you never know what's going to come out of left field, as they say in baseball.
Yeah, I actually have not a question for you, but, you know, it's one for Sean. How does it feel no longer being the top New Jersey legend in here now that Todd's here? You've been demoted.
Well, as you like to remind me and our listeners, I'm actually from South Dakota. That's where I was born. And I didn't move to New Jersey until I was in second grade. So, but I also, you know, I'm Burlington County. Todd, you're what? Ocean County?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's a completely different part of the state. So it might as well be two different places.
I bet Chris Christie knows where Todd lives.
Yeah, he was laying out back of my pool like he did on the beach a while back. That's hysterical.
That's a callback to a joke. Chris Christie came to an A's game in 2016, and he asked to meet me because I was from New Jersey. And when he asked where I was from, he didn't recognize the town that I told him I was from.
Oh, my God, that's not good.
It was just awkward.
Like, didn't he also like not even pretend to know it? Like, it would have been super easy to be like, oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, you gotta play that one off, Chris.
I had to hit it. I just ended up hitting him with like an exit seven, and I was like, you know, exit seven, 206 south. And he was like, oh yeah, 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 it's beautiful down there. I was like, yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Governor.
You gotta flip the script and just go to something else for sure. Talk about pizza, pork roll, whatever you want, just something to New Jersey, and he'll be, oh yeah, we're good. Good stuff.
That's one of my favorite photos, Chris Christie in his like moist, horribly wrinkled pants, shaking your hand, and you look very uninterested in what's going on.
Yeah. I got pulled out. I was like I was getting work done in the weight room, and they were like, hey, he wants to talk to you. And I was like, all right. And then he was like, just didn't know where I was from. It's a small town, I mean, in his defense, but
yeah, New Jersey isn't that big of a state, though.
No, it's got it's got a lot of people. It's got 21 counties. I mean, listen, it's small but big at the same time. But yeah, I guess I'd give him the pass. I would give him the pass, but at the same time, I wouldn't know what to do next time I saw him. I would say, hey, I'm actually from Tom's River. If you forgot, oh, okay, my bad. You're good. We're good.
I live on the boardwalk. Sorry. No more confusion.
Exactly.
But Todd stayed home. He went to Rutgers, you know, like, you know, state champ, high school baseball, group three state champ. You know, like he's the Jersey son.
At least someone stayed true.
Listen.
Well, look, the two of you, we mentioned before the show, you did face off on what ended up being your prom night, right?
Yeah, and not in the way people think, by the way you just phrased that question.
Listen.
That's good call by you, Sean.
But yeah, yeah, that was our senior year, I remember, and that was state playoffs, and that was, Todd, that was your first year in group four.
Yeah.
And we played, they had to like, they changed the game time. They moved it up like an hour or two, and they came and played at our place. And it was like, not only was it a state playoff game, but it was also our prom night. And there was like, I mean, man, like that was the biggest game I think we played in my time in high school, especially at least my senior year. And I remember we won. Okay, so I'll start there. But
glad you got that things, out of the way.
I remember a few things about that game. And Todd, correct me if I'm wrong. I remember when our team was warming up and taking infield, outfield on the field before the game, your guys stood like in front of the dugout or like along the foul line and just heckled the crap out of our guys for like 10 minutes. And like all our guys, I was warming up pitching, so like I didn't hear it. And like all our guys came back to the dugout and they were so fired up because you guys were just trash talking us for like 20 minutes before the game.
Yeah. So that's just something our head coach, Ken Frank, he always say, hey, listen, we got to get in their heads, you know, start, you know, be loud, you know. And they wanted us, every time you guys took infield, outfield, they said, get as close as possible. So sometimes we got as close as we're almost getting hit with the fungo bat, man. It was, you think about it now, you're like, what the hell were we doing? But we were trying to psych you guys out. And I think that was the wrong thing we did there. And it was, and you know, you always have your four or five guys on the team that don't play or just assholes. Like they're the guys, like they'll fight in the matter of a drop of a dime. They're always in the front. I'm like in the middle laughing, but at the same time I'm yelling. I don't even know what the hell I'm yelling, but yeah, we're screaming and yelling, trying to psych out everybody else. It worked for a lot of games, but I guess that one, it didn't work out too well.
Well, you did well. I think you had a couple hits off me. At least I remember you guys scored first. You had scored in the top of the first. And we ended up winning the game, and we won. We were super excited, and like we kind of rushed out of there because it was prom night. We had to go get ready and stuff. And Todd stayed behind and picked up a wood bat and started taking BP for the scouts.
Yeah, I've never done that. My coach was like, "Yo, go ahead. We, you know, just Do you remember there was probably 15, 20 cross-checkers there at that game, bro?
Not only
was it a, if people don't understand, cross-checker is like one of the top scouts of each organization that they have for the major leagues. But besides the game, win or lose, you and me were fighting for a draft pick. You know, we're trying to, right. You know, you're hitting, you're pitching, which is great. I'm hitting, playing defense, but the major league scouts were all over the place. And the guy goes, can we see you hit with a wood bat after game? I just lost my last game in high school and I'm disappointed, but he's like, get out there. And I'm launching balls into the woods there. I think we lost, a couple dozen balls, but it was, I was so mad. That was probably my best showing for the scouts ever because I was so mad. I was just trying to launch every single ball into the woods. The weirdest things, the things you see in baseball. I've never been a part of something like that. It was unbelievable.
That was only just the beginning because then we crossed paths. We faced off in the Carpenter Cup.
Yep.
And for people that don't know, the Carpenter Cup is a big Philadelphia, South Jersey baseball tournament where each county is represented by an all-star team. You play each other. The early rounds are at UPenn's field in Philly, and then the later rounds you get to play at Citizens Bank Park. So it's a huge deal for high school baseball. And Todd and I, I was on the Burlington County team. I don't even remember how the game went. I just remember we had like a 20-pitch at bat.
Yes, that was just fouling pitches off, and then I popped up the center. I think it was like a 2 or 3 nothing game. It wasn't really that good of a game, but yeah, you guys ended up winning that one too. So I was like, shit, if I ever face him again, I got to do something really, really good because I'm fucking pissed. Excuse my language. I'm really pissed.
I don't know. Did you guys face off at Citi Field or something? Like maybe, I don't know. Like, I haven't thought about it in a while. I haven't brought it up to Sean ever.
What are we, 10 minutes in? That took longer than I thought, Rich.
Yes.
Listen, he's losing his edge.
Had to pace ourselves.
No, listen, Sean, I got to be honest with you. I feel like you weren't 100% that game either, though.
No, I wasn't. But...
No, you weren't. Your fastball velocity wasn't as high as it was, and, we saw that coming. So we're like, you know what? We're just going to sit fastballs here and try and do our thing. And it was probably one of the better innings I've ever been a part of. No offense to you, but it was – I still get hit up all the time from the New York Mets fans. They're like, dude, best thing ever. I'm like, we didn't even make the playoffs that year. And you guys, it was really great. Let me tell you, we didn't even make the damn playoffs. So that's awesome.
Yeah. I think every time I bring it up, Sean says like, yeah, after that, the Nats season didn't go that well. We just won a World Series. I'm like, yeah, I know.
You have nights like that as a closer, man. Like it happens, and hey, you don't have your best stuff, and you try to grind through it, and
yep,
it can go sideways real quick.
You know which one I remember even more, not to toot my own horn, but when I hit the home run against you in Oakland, you picked up the ball and you threw it against the backstop. Do you remember that or no?
Yeah.
And you know what? You guys were up like 4 runs and you still won the game, but I knew you were so mad because it was me that hit the home run off.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It was all because like I'd faced you the day before. I got you the day before. And yep. We faced off again. And I went back and I think I was ahead in the count, but I went high fastball. It was like at your head.
Yeah, I don't know how he got
like,
to
it. It tomahawked it like way gone. And yeah, in the scope of things, it was generally a it didn't have an impact on the game really. Yeah. Like we won, like you said, but I was so pissed.
He goes back to back days. You should never been in that last game for what reason? I don't know. And I got that plane flight home. I was like, you know what? Screw the win. I got him finally. I'm pretty happy right now. So it was good. And I think we talked. I think we talked on the phone after that too. And You're like, let's go get dinner. And I said, I had something to do, but I'm like, what a nice guy. Just hit a homer off him. He's pissed off. And he asked me to dinner and I should have taken you up.
He was going to do like a James Bond drink poisoning.
Yeah.
All good. Those are good memories for both of us, no matter how you put it.
I mean, we were on the same team for a while too. Like we just talked a lot about facing off each other, but, we were roommates for on Team USA in the summer of 2006.
How about this guy, Sean? How about Sean Doolittle? Nobody knows this story. He had to fly. We had a game, and you had to fly home, or you had to go somewhere. Do you remember? Yeah. You had to fly home. You flew back. You flew home. Half a day later, you flew back. You got back to the game in like the sixth inning.
Oh, yeah.
The guy comes in at 0-0, pinch hit, walk off, game over. Sean Doolittle wins the game for USA against Japan. The guy's the guy's running on like 4 hours of sleep, and I'm like, this guy's legendary. It was unbelievable.
That team was stacked. That was one of the most fun summers like I've ever had.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You just think of some of the names. You know, we had David Price. We had Zach Kozar, Brandon Crawford, Julio Bourbon. Not many people remember. He was one of the fastest guys I've ever met in my life, center fielder. Roger Kieschnick. I mean, we had some, you know, some names you won't remember, but they were unbelievable college athletes.
Pedro Alvarez.
I forgot about Pedro hitting 500-foot nukes. J.P. Arencibia. Oh, my God. I forgot about him.
Darwin Barney.
Darwin Barney, probably the best college baseball player in our generation. You never know.
Yeah. So, he was playing all over the field, too. He was playing outfield, infield.
It was great.
Everywhere.
Good times.
Yeah.
How far did you guys go in that? Did you, like, win a
– We won the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah, we did. We were in Cuba for 2 weeks for the, the World Baseball Championships. And
That was unique, too. Not many people can experience that. That was cool.
And actually, you were on Team USA again a few years ago, and you got the silver in Tokyo, right?
So I actually played one more year. It was all non-40-man roster guys. So if you were on the 40-man, you couldn't play. And that's when we had a team with Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and Mike Trout. I mean, and we actually lost. I think we came in third. And we were pissed off. You know, it was just one of those things where we're playing in Puerto Rico, and we felt like we were playing in the Dominican Republic, because when we played Dominican, like, everybody, nobody cheered for us. It's amazing. I'm thinking, like, they're part of U.S., and, you know, we're getting the raw end of the stick here, and the umpires are calling. No, and I'm telling you, Sean, you know how it was when we played in Cuba. They're calling them foot off the plate. If this catcher didn't move his glove, they're calling strikes, and the guy was a Latin umpire, and I'm getting in his ass, and it was just not for nothing. It was one of those games where – it was a little unfair, but hey, listen, you got to play through them anyway. But Mike Trout, that's when I saw Mike play for the first time. I knew him, and like I knew I'm real friendly with him. But that time, seeing him play, I said, you guys, you better be ready. This guy's going to be pretty much the best player in the world. And he was and is. Him and, well, Shohei, of course, but pretty fun times.
I always forget that Trout is also a New Jersey guy. Like, that slips my memory every time.
He's more Philadelphia, New Jersey, too.
Yeah. He's had enough Eagles games that you sort of forget about it.
Yes.
I grew up kind of halfway between where Todd is from and Trout is from. But I'm still in Philly territory.
Mm-hmm.
But we got some good baseball down there, man. Like,
no
people
doubt.
People sleep on it, but.
The problem is, go ahead.
No, I remember like when we went to, remember when we were at that showcase at UNC Wilmington, and
yes,
we were on the Northeast team, and that team did some work that weekend. We had some really good pitching, but I remember, like, you know, it's the East Coast showcase, so they got, you know, kids from all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And obviously the Florida teams and the Georgia teams, North and South Carolina teams, are the favorites. And our team from the Northeast, like, we did really well. And it was like a huge point of pride for us to go to a showcase like that as kids from the Northeast and New Jersey, especially, and compete and not just hold our own, but, like, you know, win against that kind of competition.
No doubt. No doubt. And I think, you know, after my first at bat, because I've never seen 95 or 96 from a high school kid. This guy, and he had a hammer, like a curveball hammer. And I'm telling you, it was three pitches. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. And I'm like, holy shit. I said, I don't know what I need to do, but I better figure it out soon. I got there was all these scouts here looking at us, and we ended up doing really good.
That was fun, man. I remember the kid on our team that I thought was going to be, you know, he was one of the bigger names at that was Mark Rogers, a kid from Maine who could throw 100 in high school. And, you know, besides us, I forget really who else was on the team, but we did really well.
Yeah, that was like wild. That was like wildly unheard of for your guy. Like that was unheard of when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I was the hardest throwing lefty at that showcase, and I hit 91.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
I remember I'm also like from New York. I was at a tournament in Texas when I was 16 playing with the 18U team. And I was facing Dylan Bundy like a couple weeks before he was the fourth overall draft pick. And he's just blowing 96 past our whole team because none of us have ever seen 96 before.
Good luck. that's what my dad told me. He said, good luck. I said, yeah, I'm going to need more than luck. But you get used to it just like anything else. Make adjustments.
Yeah, I know. So you and Sean had your battles, but actually and Hack faced off once.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
You probably don't remember this one because it was in a minor league rehab game.
Oh my God.
It was Port St. Lucie. Not actually Port St. Lucie. We were playing at the Jackie Robinson complex, the old Dodgers complex in 2019. Oh,
God. Yeah.
Just awful stuff. If you had an at bat where a weird sidearm throwing guy kind of buzzed you in on the first pitch and then threw you a slider so he didn't hit you, that was me.
Oh no. What did I end up doing that at bat?
You flew out to center. Like I buzzed you in on the first one and I was just like, ah, fuck, I can't hit Todd Frazier.
Oh, no, you should have. All good.
I know I could have, but I didn't want to.
Yeah, you're like, all right, I'm facing a major league guy. I want to show him something here. I don't want to get him on here.
Well, yeah, it's also like, you know, we're playing in a, you know, weirdly, it's Jackie Robinson Day. Like, we're playing in this old complex to honor him. And I'm just like, there's no way this guy, like, no one ever wants to be rehabbing. It's just like, all right, I'm not going to make this guy's day worse by hitting him.
800 degrees. It was there's no dugout tops. Remember that?
It was completely exposed. And then there was a fight that game.
There was? Oh shit, I don't remember. That's awesome.
You might have left. I hope you did.
Me too.
One of our guys pimped a homer. Someone took exception to it and drilled him the next time.
Ooh.
Which we weren't sure if it was on purpose or not. And then I was with the Twins at the time. I later ended up with the Mets playing with some of the guys who were a part of your side of that game. I was like, I was talking to them about it and they were like, oh yeah, we did that on purpose. I was just like, oh cool. It's good to know.
You don't see that too often anymore. Baseball is a little different nowadays.
Yeah. You know, you try to avoid it, but
yeah,
I imagine you hitting Todd in the rehab game and getting like a letter in your locker from the Wilpons charging you for whatever was left on his contract.
Oh Jesus, no chance. That's funny.
Yeah, so I'm actually the only one who hasn't faced you, but we did cross paths online once, and I still keep the quote of it in my Twitter bio. When you got traded back to the Mets in 2020,
okay,
I posted a picture of Joe Pesci and Goodfellas about to get his brains blown out when he's walking into the room.
Okay.
I said something like Todd Frazier going to the manager's office to find out he's going back to the Mets.
That's awesome. I think I remember this. I don't know what I said. Did I retweet it or I say something?
Yeah, you quote tweeted and you're like, oh, one of my friends showed me this fantastic work.
Yeah, I thought it was hysterical. Hey, I give credit where it's due.
There were a lot of Mets fans in the replies like, this guy thinks coming back is like getting shot in the head.
I knew it, bro. You can rattle the Mets fans like nobody's business. If you just, even if I retweeted it, they're like, this guy doesn't deserve to be here. Yeah, I want to ruffle some feathers. Good. I'm glad. Good stuff.
Mets fans, they're like unique maniacs in that the second you do any sort of slight to them, like I guarantee there's some WFAN callers who are still like, yeah, you know, Todd Frazier. Yeah. I saw him on Twitter. I don't know, you know, He said I should get shot in the head a few years ago.
Oh, Jesus.
They'll hold it against you forever.
Oh, without a doubt they will.
Was it cool, Todd, playing for the Mets or the Yankees? Like, what did you grow up a fan of when you were a kid? Were you a Yankees or Mets fan?
So I was more of a player fan. I mean, I rooted for the Yankees. I was a big Paul O'Neill guy growing up, man. I love that guy. I love every second about him, the way he played the game, his determination to be the best. But
you got to wear 21 in Cincinnati, too. Yeah. Is that why you wore it?
No, they just gave me that number randomly. So for me,
that's awesome.
That was really cool. So it was random. I mean, you know, in spring training, I think I was like number 94. I'm like, guys, can you give me just a better number? And they're like, yeah, we got you. And they gave me 21. Then I was going to be 21 with the Yankees. And then those fans got upset. Like, oh, Paul O'Neill's number. You should be retired. I'm like, listen, it's not retired. I'll give it to him when he's retired. I'll change the number. Like, people get so sensitive over retired numbers when the Yankees got like 10 numbers left for people to get, you know, with all the retired numbers on there. So,
you can't wear a single digit number for them anymore, right?
No, basically, no. You're going to have to put like 0-1. But listen, it was, I've had a great experience. Not many people could say they play for both New York teams. And I think, I've been really blessed with that. So I got the best of both worlds, man. So I got made a lot of good friends and meet a lot of good people through it.
I think of all the players to be a Met and a Yankee, you're one of the few that both sides really like equally. On both of them, you sort of inspired like rallying gestures with the salt and pepper and the thumbs down. And I think not a lot of guys are liked by one of them, but to be liked by both, I think, is a really unique position to be in.
Yeah, I guess I did something right. I don't know what it was. I thank Sean for the home run because that's how I'll go down in New York. Maybe it was something, the home run I hit with the Yankees in the playoffs, the thumbs down thing, the salt and pepper shaker thing. I mean, crazy stuff comes out of baseball, man. And it was truly amazing.
So I had one question for you, Todd, coming into this, since we're talking about sort of legends around you, like, fans, there's a slightly lesser known one that I know because I played in the Big East. I played at St. John's. Mm-hmm. The legend that in the Big East tournament when you were at Rutgers, playing at the Brooklyn Cyclones Park, MCU, they have these, for those of you who don't know, they have these big light poles in the back with these huge rings around them.
I know where you're going through it.
for a batter to hit a baseball through there would have to launch it 500 plus feet. And the legend that I always heard is that when Todd was at Rutgers, you put one through one of those rings during the Big East tournament.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. I don't know how far it went, but that was one where I hit it and stood there for a couple seconds. I remember that was against Louisville. And funny, people still come up to me and they talk about Rutgers and they say that ball that you hit still going. And they said, I think it hit one of the roller coasters out there. And I was like, oh, funny. He's like, no.
No. Yeah.
It hit one of the roller coasters out there. I'm like, and I'm looking, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. I think I think
it went 500 feet. It had to be at least 500.
I think it's actually the Cyclone. The wooden roller coaster is out beyond left field. Yeah.
Yes. I put it through the rings and it hit the same thing that the picture of. That was definitely true.
That's
the distance,
awesome.
I'm not sure the distance, but it was definitely one of my furthest home runs.
Yeah, that's launched.
It's a good memory.
I like how there are little like legends in the corners of baseball where someone passes through and for the next 20 years, everyone's like, it ends up being a 15th hand account. Where it gets exaggerated enough, but especially when you find out it is real.
Yeah, it's like the legend of Babe Ruth hitting like a 650-foot home run. Like, I would have loved to have been there to see that, you know. I think that's a far shot with those that wooden bat must have had some kind of cork in it to do something like that, but you never know. You just never know.
Have you heard about I'm going to bring up Helen Ruth, folks.
Oh, no.
Have you heard about the Helen Ruth saga that Ben Verlander started up for no reason whatsoever?
No, I didn't hear about this.
So it was Hall of Fame season a few years ago, and Ben Verlander tweeted something like, the moral gatekeepers of the Hall of Fame keep Barry Bonds out while Babe Ruth is in and he killed his poor wife Helen in a house fire.
Oh my God.
And like 15 minutes later, he put like an asterisk in a reply and put allegedly.
Oh my God.
I guess Fox Corporate must have got to him, been like, please don't accuse the great Bambino of killing his wife in a house fire.
Is that true or was he just kidding around?
No, Babe Ruth was in like St. Louis. They were already divorced and she was in like Massachusetts when it happened.
Oh my God. Dude, Ben's got some quirky stuff he puts on there. I've seen a couple of them.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah.
People, man, when you get a voice online, you can do whatever the heck you want, man.
Oh, yeah. That's why Rich has this podcast.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
People love giving weirdos attention, so I just had to decide to give them a podcast. I haven't accused anyone of murder yet, but...
No,
we got to make it a good one before you do.
Yeah. I have to go a level above Helen Ruth in a house fire before I make any proclamations.
Unbelievable.
What are you guys
at foul territory, or just like your personal opinion, what are some things that are you following anything heading into the season? Are you making any bold predictions for the season? Like what are you guys cooking up over there?
We have to get that out soon. So we gotta I made a bold prediction last year which didn't come true, and I still get heat for it. I thought Jose Abreu was gonna lead the American League in home runs and be the MVP, and I was way off on that pick. That was a bold prediction.
We were probably getting a lot of good responses when he had zero home runs into June.
Oh my God. And they were just killing me. So every time I try and get a laugh out of somebody, I'm like, hey, listen, Jose Abreu's gonna have a heck of a year, and they all start laughing at me. Yeah, off the top of my head, now I have a couple days to decide on this, but off the top of my head, I picked Mookie Betts to lead the league in having the most hits. I think that's something I talked about. I think he's going to have a heck of a year with the lineup behind him. Ooh. Now, I don't know what's going on with the Shohei thing, so that might hurt a little bit. But, I think, you know, nothing bold, but I think Pete Alonso is going to lead the National League in homers. I'm trying to think here. Who else? I did talk about it being an East-West World Series, Yankees-Dodgers. So I think that would be pretty cool if that does happen. But, yeah, I got a little time to think about it. I got a little time.
The good news is it'll always be better than last year. So yeah. There's no going down.
Exactly.
I know one thing that followed you and that people still remember is your walk-up song was Frank Sinatra. And
yeah. It
was always something that made people pay attention. It was such a, in addition to being like 40 years older than anyone else's song, it was very like slow tempo. And how did you settle upon that? And what made you stick with it?
Yeah, it was real simple. You know, my grandparents always used to play music in their house and it was slow. And I, you know, when I was younger, I'm like, come on, Graham, like, we play a little something with a more rhythm, and they wouldn't steer away from it. And then, you know, as I got older, I started knowing all the words because that's all you hear in your grandmother's house. And eventually I'm like, you know what? I'm playing this for my grandma and grandpa. You know what I mean? It brings me back. It relaxes me, makes me smile, that kind of thing. And it just stuck with me. I mean, you should see the old biddies at Cincinnati, man. They always used to give me love over there for playing that song. So I did it for the old ladies in Cincinnati.
I know Sean was a big hit with the old ladies in Cincinnati too.
There were some big hits during my time in Cincinnati, but it was not between me and the Reds fans.
Oh, hey, can't be loved by everybody, right?
I love my time there. I love playing for the organization. I really enjoyed the city and everything. I just didn't pitch that good. It happens.
You're right, kid. We've been there. We've all been there.
You got the immaculate grid spot, so wasn't all bad.
That's right. That's right. Mariners Reds, immaculate grid spot. Everybody.
It's you, and then it's Ken Griffey.
You get a lot of points for that.
I know one thing I was wondering is that being someone who is from Jersey, you end online. Sean was also thinking of it before we even made this official. You're a Turkey correspondent online, or you have been at times. And, we were just wondering here, how's the Turkey report coming along? Is everything good?
It's going well. I've honestly, in the past 2 years, I've probably seen 10 of them now. So it was bad. About 10 years ago, they were pecking at my car. I had like 20 of them. I couldn't even get into a car back in the day. It was really bad. I get these random guys hitting me up. Like, listen, I'll take care of them. Just give me one night. I'm like, dude, that's the last thing I want to do. I'm like, let me talk to somebody, try and get them relocated. Lo and behold, I guess somebody moved in down the street and they knocked down a lot of the woods. And next thing you know, they had nowhere to go. So they went south, I guess. I'm not sure.
Did I miss something? Was there just an infestation of turkeys in New Jersey?
Yeah, man. I don't know. It was something crazy. I don't know why. They were usually on the other part of town, but they came in flocks, man. It was incredible. I was like opening my door, walking outside, like, where are they at? And boom.
Just like watching out for a gang.
Exactly. What do you call turkeys, a group of turkeys? I don't know.
That's a good question.
I don't know. I want to say flock probably works, but that doesn't sound right. Is that a mob or is that something else?
I think that's something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it was before you tweeted it out, people saw it. They're like, is that Todd Frazier on like News 12 talking about turkeys?
Two ladies hit me up. They're like, can we interview him? I'm like, sure, let me get this out. So I kind of called out the governor. We actually talked on the phone about it too, which was great. Not many people know about that. We found a way to talk. I was like, you're going to do something about this? He's like, yeah, we got this, you know? And we had animal control over here trying to get traps, not to kill them, to get them to come together. And then we put them together, put them on the truck and send them out to where they'll have no problems.
Yeah, I remember you just posted pictures of like 8 to 10 turkeys crawling all over your windshield, just being like, rough commute this morning.
Yeah, listen, there's so many dents too. It was because when turkeys see an image of themselves, like if there was a mirror, they fight it. Like they think it's another turkey trying to come after them. And they would just pep away trying to kill the other turkey. And next thing you know, my car, because I got shot with BB guns. It was crazy. All the dents.
A very quick Google search has shown that a group of turkeys is called either a rafter or a flock. So.
All right. Well,
I like rafter. Sounds quite threatening.
Yeah. A rafter of turkeys sounds much more intimidating.
Very true.
So. No more dents is what I'm hearing.
No more. Over the 5-6 years now, it's been great.
Glad we've reached a peace agreement with the turkeys.
It was funny, too, because you would see them all year long, and then a week before Thanksgiving, nowhere to be found. I couldn't make it up. I couldn't make it up. It was unbelievable.
Did you get any turkeys down in your area, New Jersey, Sean? Or was that not your speed?
We had a lot of wildlife, but I can't remember ever seeing a turkey. We had a lot of deer and a lot of like, you know, groundhogs. But we did get like all kinds of ducks and geese. Like it's the Garden State. Like people forget. Like we got quite a bit of, especially down where I grew up, like a lot of farmland, a lot of protected forest.
Yeah.
So we saw a lot of that stuff. But I never saw a turkey.
That's what people don't understand, how much farmland is in New Jersey too, as well. There's tons of it.
I also always forget that like the Northwest has all like the mountains.
Like, yeah.
I had a college teammate who was from there, and he was just like, yeah, everyone was just like, yeah, all my other New Jersey and teammates were like, yeah, he's like a weird mountain man compared to the rest of New Jersey. I was like, how is that a thing? Like,
yeah, for sure.
And there was an entire Sopranos episode just based around "We're lost in the wilderness. Help us."
Love that.
Yeah, but that wasn't filmed in the Pine Barrens, and it made me a little bit mad, but
really,
you know,
they faked it.
What are you going to do? Yeah, there's no chance, like the trees are wrong, and there's no like hills or mountains like were in the background of those shots. So that was probably up in North Jersey somewhere.
Man, they should have had you as a correspondent.
Yeah, you were ready for that.
Listen, Todd knows this too. Like when you're in baseball and people rag on New Jersey, you end up learning, you got all these facts on hand about your state that you can come back and correct them.
Exactly. They always say, oh man, when we fly into Newark, see all the pipes and the stacks and all the electrical crap going on over there. And I'm like, bro, get outside of there and you'll understand.
Do you think the perception's changing the more you talk to those guys, that you think you're winning them over, or is it a losing battle?
That's always a losing battle. You gotta where we're from, you gotta have thick skin, but at the same time, you don't take any crap either. So if you think someone's coming after you, your family, where you live, talk about your food, talk about your trees, talk about that grass on the ground there. No, anything, I get defensive quick.
That's why I've always said this is a very pro-New Jersey podcast, mostly because Sean wouldn't be on if it wasn't. You know, one thing I always think about is the home run derby you were in. You were at home, and being able to do something like that, weren't you one of the first players to actually win it at home?
And I think Ryan Sandberg was the first one, but it was one of those. He won like 1-0 or 2-1 or something.
Yeah, so it was Wrigley, and the wind was coming in, so there were two home runs the whole event.
That was it. So it wasn't as memorable, but yeah, playing in front of your home crowd was unbelievable. I had my brother throwing. My other brother was like hyping me up on the side, and it was truly memorable. Something that, you know, I actually was practicing for my brother before the season started, knowing that it was going to be in Cincinnati, and it was magical, man. It was really cool.
What's the invite process like for that? Like, especially being the Cincinnati guy, I guess you figured, well, one of us is going to be in there, whether it's you or Jay Bruce or Votto. What's it like? How do you actually get invited?
Well, the format was, if you were one of the top like eight in the league in home runs at the time, you're going to get called. And I think I was number one. I had the number one seed for the National League at the time. And, you know, they called me up and said, listen, are you in? I said, yeah, say no more. And I was so excited about it. And then they call you the another day and be like, hey, dude, you're the leading voter getter as a third baseman, so you're going to be an all-star and playing the home run derby. And it was something you pinch yourself, man, because, you know, you're in the backyard when you're a kid. Let's do home run derby. Last at bat, 3-2 count, you know, home run, boom. And I got to play it out in real life, which was truly, truly awesome.
And you won on your last swing, right?
Yeah, you get time. So, I still had about 25 seconds, but yeah, it was the last swing.
Oh, that was the first year with like the time component.
Yep.
I kind of like that. I think that I miss the old format, but I actually have come around to kind of liking the new one.
Yeah, it's tiring as heck, but it was it was fun.
I always go back and forth. Right, like doing the home run derby at Great American Ballpark is fun because you're going to hit a lot of homers. Like I go back and forth on like, should it be really fun to watch because guys are going to launch balls out of here? Like the home run derby at Coors was awesome.
Yeah.
Or like if you have to go play in like a giant dead ballpark and it's actually like, oh, like this guy got one out at all, it's impressive. The answer is, of course, you want to see a ton of home runs, but it's funny when it's like, you know, if it were at like San Francisco. Just yeah, like that guys are never getting out.
Yeah, but guys are juiced up and, you know, not literally, but they're fired up. They're going to find a way to get it out. The power some of these guys have. No park is holding out some of these guys.
Right.
Were you ever like did guys come to you in like future years as like, hey, you know, you're the home run derby sage. You won it. What do I do? How do I win this?
Oh, well, Pete Alonso, I talked to him about it. We was on the Mets when he first did it. And I gave him a good piece of advice that he came to me and said, Todd, thank God you told me. I said, well, in between each round, I said, down a whole bottle of Pedialyte because you're going to be absolutely dehydrated and drained. And he said, Todd, I did that. And I actually felt a lot better during and after. I said, yeah, that was something I did too. I would just chug Pedialyte and it helped out.
I'll say there's 3 wins on that method already.
True. He's a phenomenal hitter.
Is he as fun in person as he seems to be just from the outside looking in?
Yeah, he's a goofball, man. You would love him. He's he'll do anything for you, but they'll have these corny jokes that he has and we're all looking at each other laughing, and he's just a great guy to be around. And he's very critical about how he plays, which is good and bad, but he critiques himself in a fair manner and he wants the best out of what he can do.
Yeah, I know one thing Sean and I found out is that he excitedly told a reporter once that he spent an entire summer hanging out at the Warped Tour in like 2010. He's like, oh, no one ever asked me about that. I really wanted to talk about this.
He's passionate about some things. That's pretty funny.
I will say, since we have 2 jersey icons here, do you guys have like a top jersey guy that you sort of look at as the best of the best?
Baseball wise?
Or anything, really. Could be baseball, could be music, television, but you got to pick one to be the king.
Oh, man. I've never been asked that before. I mean, usually baseball, I would definitely say Mike Trout. There's not many from New Jersey that have put up the numbers he has. What do you think,
Sean? The first thing that came to my head was Bruce Springsteen. I know that's like a cliche answer, but I'm a boss head.
Yeah, that's an easy one to go. I mean, Bon Jovi, you can go to – oh, man. I'm trying to think here.
Gerard Way, My Chemical Romance.
Like for the one that – go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, all I can think of right now are musicians.
I mean, you think about 2 other players. Derek Jeter was born in New Jersey, but he moved out when a young age. Shaquille O'Neal was born in New Jersey, moved out of young age. I don't know why Joe Pesci keeps coming to my head. I don't know why, but he's got a house about 30 minutes south from here on the shore he's trying to sell right now. There's some legendary people out here from Jersey. So
I mean, Sinatra is another very famous musician on that line, right?
That would have been an easy one, you know?
That's a layup.
Yeah, it's too easy.
So there you go.
I also think isn't Jack Nicholson from New Jersey?
Yes. Yep.
You know, on this podcast, we're dispelling the notion that our most talented actors and singers aren't from New Jersey. There's enough Oscars and Grammys to fill an entire boat.
We got the best pizza.
Oh, God.
That's a debate for another time.
Uh-oh.
Say, confront him. We're doing it live.
I have not. I guess I actually haven't had that much pizza in New Jersey to say. I'm sure it's probably the same as New York overall.
See, my thing is the specialty slices like buffalo chicken pizza, chicken parm pie. You know, like I always tell people, like, hey, you want to split a pie with me? And they're, you know, these people from South are like, bro, we haven't eaten dinner. I'm like, yo, come on, man. You know what I mean? Do you want pepperoni? What are your sauces? What do you
want? Yeah,
but. I'm, you know, the plain slices, New York is really good. They're really good, too. So
it's tough to eat.
You can't really go wrong. I'm a thin slice guy. I don't like Sicilian slices that much. So I like the thin crust.
Yeah, as long as we all agree that Chicago deep dish is just something else entirely.
Oh, just terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a casserole. It's not pizza. It's a whole other thing.
It's dough. That's what it is. Just it's like a, oh man, it's no good.
You're never getting invited to White Sox Old Timers Day after this one.
No, they already know. I've already told them about it already. They know.
Is there anything else in mind? Anything coming into the season that that you think is really going to be interesting this year? Something that you already mentioned some predictions, but anything to look out for that you don't think is really getting the coverage it should or will get eventually?
The first thing that comes to my mind is this new sliding rule. Like you can't put your knee down, or like if you put your foot in front of the base, they're going to call them safe. Like I think I liked it in the beginning, but I'm not a fan of it anymore because you see, I saw it at home plate the other day. The catcher kind of put his leg out a little bit before he caught the ball and the umpire called him safe. And I'm like, I think it was in a minor league game, but I'm like, dude, that's not baseball, dude. Like we're starting to get away from what really baseball is. It's kind of frustrating. Like me at third base, like I'm trying to catch the ball and protect myself at the same time. Like, I don't know where my foot's going to land. I'm looking for the ball as it's coming. I'm running and pretty much catching the ball at the same time. So it's going to be a lot of scrutiny about that one. And that's going to be tough. You're going to see a lot of games won or lost and a lot more stolen bases, I think, too, as well, because of that rule.
Yeah, I get that they're trying to bring back the stolen base. But like there was the play with Lindor that was like the first big one. Where it's like that guy was out by 10 feet. Like it's not a close play. He's not obstructing him because he's out.
Terrible.
Now that
I'm interested to see how it plays out because it gives the umps it gives them a lot of discretion there, like a lot of power to make that judgment call in the moment. And it could just be the throw takes you into the baseline, and which I think is kind of what happened on the Lindor play. Like that was against us. And you're right, our guy was out by a mile, but he wasn't like consciously making an effort to block the base. Like the throw took him over there a little bit up and into the baseline. And like Todd's saying, the footwork you have to do around the bag is already difficult enough. And to try to be doing it, you know, in the heat of the game, it's going to be tough. I get they want to protect guys too and prevent injuries while also bringing back the stolen base. But I think there's a huge difference in like blocking the base and, you know, dropping your knee down in front of the bag. And now you're looking at broken fingers or separated shoulders or something, and a throw that takes you into the baseline a little bit, you know, there's a big difference there.
No doubt.
Of course, if it goes our way, if I'm in the dugout and it goes our way, then I'll say it's a great, it's a great call.
It's a beautiful rule.
Great job. Yeah.
If there's one thing we know about baseball, it's that we want umpires to have more effect on the game, right?
Yeah, right. Unbelievable. You're right. No chance.
Now that you're retired, you and Sean, are there things that go on like rule changes or it sort of shifts in the game where you see it and you think, man, I'm glad I am not playing right now? Like you said, with the blocking rule or obstruction at third base, or Sean with like a pitch clock, are you sort of glad you played when you did as more things change?
I'm glad that I'm not playing because the way pitchers are pitching nowadays, they're all throwing 95 plus, and that's my biggest issue. That's probably why I retired. Well, not retired. Nobody wanted me at the end, if you want the truth. So then you have to retire. But it was a blessing in disguise because these guys are absolutely throwing missiles and the ball moves so darn much. And that's tough to hit, man. It's really tough to hit.
Got sweepers now. They're inventing new pitches that are even more deadly than the last ones.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck.
You are missing out on wearing the pants.
The crazy thing is, guys, like there's a generation of hitters that's coming up now who've like that's what they're used to hitting against, and it's crazy. For me, I don't know, it's probably some combination of like the pitch clock and pitch calm and limiting the amount of throwovers and You know, I always thought like a big part of pitching was managing the tempo of the inning, and you could control a lot of the energy in the moment by slowing things down between pitches or speeding it back up between pitches. And so I missed that, like that cat and mouse game, that part of the strategy of the one-on-one. And you know, it's, I was playing last year and there was a game in, I was in rehab assignment with Rochester, and I came out of the bullpen, and it was the first time I had a pitch comm in my ear, and I was, and they were giving me the signs, the computer voice was talking to me, and there was a pitch clock, and the umpire and the strike zone was the robot zone. And like,
ooh,
I
was,
I had like, I had like an existential crisis on the mound before the first pitch. I was like, I'm so fucking old. When like, I feel like I'm in a video game.
Yeah, that's insane. I just don't want it to be. I like the human element.
Yeah.
But I also like when the, if a catcher thinks if it's a strike, give a look. I like that.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I might like.
I think the challenge system is probably the way to go moving forward.
And I think if a batter thinks it's a ball, like, go ahead, dude. If you know your zone, go right ahead.
Yeah, that's a whole other strategy element where it's like the catcher – because sometimes there were times where we would have pitchers who just kind of got like mad and like redlined on the mound and just started tapping their head because they wanted a review. And it turned out that it wasn't even close, really. And we had or the catcher we had in AAA was like really good at it. And so the pitchers would defer to him. And then you got to factor like how many challenges you got left on the day. Like, should I use this one now? This is real. Is this an important pitch? Like, how bad do we need this? Yeah. So it's, I think, and the technology seems to be there. Like, it's pretty quick when they do it, maybe like 10 seconds. So, like, I think I would like to try that. Maybe they could, maybe they could implement that in the next year or two. Try it in spring training or something. See how it goes.
I feel like as a pitcher, you have to defer to your catcher because I like I'm Sean Reed the same way. Like, I think everything is a strike. I get fooled.
Yeah.
I get fooled by catcher frames just as much as umpires do, if not more. I'm like, that's a strike, and then I go look at it afterwards, and I miss by 4 inches. Like, that's way, that's not even close to being a strike. And it's just like, ah, okay. I should not be allowed. I shouldn't be the one who calls this.
Yeah, I'll do the same thing with when the guys like get a hit or hit a homer, and like I'm standing on the mound, and I'm like, how did he hit that? And then like I go back and look at the video, and I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, turns out it was right down the middle. My bad. All right.
How's Nats camp going? Are you, before you break into the season, is everything strategizing down there?
We're ready. Yeah. It was an awesome camp, I thought. It was my first time, obviously, being on the coaching side and everything like that. So it was very different for me, and I learned a lot, and I had a blast. We have an awesome group, younger group, just like last year, but I think we're in a really good spot heading into the season.
I think it's going to be good when every pitcher is throwing 97 mile an hour fastballs up in the zone. You could really feel your effect on them.
It's all about pitching to your strengths, baby.
How's it feel going from like the oldest player to youngest coach? Is that a, do you feel cooler now? More hip and with it?
It's weird. They do ask me like what the guys are talking about in the clubhouse when they say certain things or phrases. And like, I don't even know because I'm 10 years older than most of them anyway. So, but yeah.
I think it's good that you're the youth correspondent.
Doing the Buscemi bit. How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah. Listen, Sean's pretty hip. He has a podcast. I think Todd could attest that having a podcast makes you pretty hip.
I don't know if it makes you hip, but it makes you feel a little relevant, I guess.
That's all we want at the end of the day.
Well, is there anything else that comes to mind that you want to ask Todd before we cap it off here? Anything New Jersey, anything baseball, anything Turkey, even though we already hit that one?
I don't think so, but it was good. It was good seeing you, Todd. I hope we can connect on foul territory at some point soon.
Yeah, man.
And I appreciated you joining us.
No, thank you guys, man. It was a blast talking to you guys.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You're one of those guys that we never expected to get, and then we get you, and we're like, wow, it was as good as we hoped it would be.
No doubt about it, man. Hey, we're all just out here doing our thing, enjoying some baseball and talking shop. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah, you guys are Monday to Friday, 1 o'clock on Foul Territory.
Yep.
All right.
Check us out. YouTube, all the main streams.
I'll stick the links down in the description.
Thank you.
But on behalf of Hack and Sean and our guest Todd, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next time with more Staffcast.